Deadly Serial contains adult language, discussions of violence, and sexual themes. Listener discretion is advised. Try to have fun. Don't take us seriously. Welcome to Deadly Serial. I am Lee Moffitt. With me, as always, is
Laura Dedrick. Welcome.
And we are tired.
We are emotionally and mentally and physically exhausted. We need a fucking break. So
we're not going to take one.
Dolby Scoop. Jeff the Talking Mongoose, which sounds like a children's book.
And it is.
It's interesting. We do have a script this week, but we're not going to really stick to it. We're just going to be talking mostly about what we think about this situation and a little more free flowing. Like I said, it's been 15 episodes. We need a little break. We're going to try something different. Obviously, this is not going to be what we're going to be doing from now on.
If you guys like it, if you guys really like this kind of thing, this is a topic that we're normally not doing.
Right. As far as the true crime goes, if you are cool with us taking a little left turn into supernatural stuff every once in a while, we would be super psyched to do it. So it's kind of getting our foot wet here.
Exactly.
So this week we have Jeff the Talking Mongoose. And I think right off the top, we got to talk about Lemon Demon.
Lemon Demon, my favorite band.
Upon researching this case, if you want to call it this, entity, we found a badass song by a band called Lemon Demon called Eighth Wonder, which is about Jeff the Talking Mongoose.
Yes, I remember him from like 15 years ago when they came out with Ultimate Showdown or of Ultimate Destiny, whatever it is. That song really inspired me to do some stuff.
Yeah, you wrote a couple songs because of that band. We had not heard about them since, so thought that was really cool. So without further ado, let's talk about Jeff.
The Dolby Spook.
He's something, all right. So this particular family that Jeff the Mongoose had chosen to appear to consisted of James, the father, Margaret, the mother, and the daughter, Avoiri. They, fun fact, had a sheepdog, and his name was Mona.
Mona.
And they lived,
I've seen pictures. She is a good girl.
Oh, she's a good girl. Mm-hmm. So glad we got her name this time. They lived in a place called Captions Gap near the hamlet of Dalby on the Isle of Man. So this is between England and Ireland.
It's like Craggy Island.
Yes. If you don't know what Father Ted is, you should find it, watch it, email us. You'll know what Craggy Island is.
Yes, I would love to talk Father Ted with anybody.
It's an incredibly obscure Irish show about priests, and it's perfect.
It's so funny.
It's so funny. It's great. Side note, check it out. Yeah. So anyway, they came across this property while they were visiting Peel, which is also on the Isle of Man. The name of the property was Dorlash Cashin. It was up for sale, and Jim, who used to sell and repair pianos, bought the property. He was retired, and they were going to live out his retirement on this property.
Sounds like a plan.
Good plan. Everything's going great. So the earliest inhabitants on the Isle of Man believed that there were magicians, enchanters, and enchantresses that lived on the island. They thought that the spirits had their command, and they were proficient in the occult sciences. It was thought that those that practiced witchcraft were able to create a familiar, you know what a familiar is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So the family settled on this small isolated farm on the west side of the island. There they had no nearby neighbors or electricity or telephone. Like you said, it was like no man's land. The closest neighbor was 4 miles away and the closest town was 8, which is terrifying.
Yeah, that's, but Margaret would walk it like it was nothing.
Yeah, Margaret was a badass woman. And it was also said that she might have been dabbled a little bit in witchcraft herself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the daughter was a lot like her mom. She was tall. She was well-built. And when I say well-built, she was hardy lady. So Jeff made his first appearance on September 13th, 1931. It started with sounds in the walls, basically like little scratchy sounds, right?
Mm-hmm. Like poltergeist activity.
Poltergeisty kind of sounds. And he would, they would be able to like bark like a dog and meow like a cat. And Jim, the dad, he would make other barnyard animal noises, and they would, he would repeat the sounds back to him immediately. They noticed Jeff would respond promptly with the appropriate sounds. Other times he would make like a gurgling sound, like a baby. Like, terrifying. Other times he spoke in like an octave, two octaves above any human voice, but it was like clear and was distinct. You could hear it would come, and then he would come down to the range of the human voice. So it was really unnerving. So he would announce his presence by calling the Irving parents by their Christian names. He was very informal that way.
Yeah. Margaret.
Margaret. He could also see in the dark and describe the movements of Jim's hands, and his hearing powers were phenomenal. He could detect a whisper 15 to 20 feet away and tell you what you were whispering the, and repeat it exactly the way you said it. Nobody likes that about you, Jeff.
No.
Nobody.
Can't say shit around Jeff.
Can't say shit around Jeff. The entity soon was able to converse with the Irvings and introduced himself as Jeff, a mongoose born in New Delhi, India in 1852. He was brought to the island 20 years earlier when a farmer had imported mongooses in hopes... It's mongooses, not mongoose.
It is mongooses, I've checked.
I know, I did too. Mongooses in hopes to curb the local rabbit population, which I'm sure went well. It always goes well when you try to bring in an animal to take out another animal.
Oh, sure. It's always good when you play God.
Right. What could go wrong? Every time. So Jeff, I just feel ridiculous saying this. Jeff claimed at times to be an extra clever mongoose, an earthbound spirit, and a ghost in the form of a weasel.
Mm-hmm.
He's an overachiever.
Yeah, he is.
Got a lot going on. The family initially referred to him as Jack, but soon the mongoose told them he preferred to be called Jeff, spelled as G-E-F. He said he could always understand human speech, but it wasn't until Jim started talking to him that he learned to speak it as well. He said, "I'm a freak. I have hands. I have feet. And if you saw me, you faint. You'd be petrified." Really wanted him to rhyme there.
Yeah, it's not his style.
Not his style to rhyme, I guess. So only the daughter was apparently the only person to see him properly, which is a little sus.
That is suspicious, yes.
She described him as the size of a small rat with yellowish fur and a large bushy tail. I told you this, he reminds me of, if anyone has ever read the Dark Tower series by Stephen King, he reminds me of Oi, who is a creature called a Billy Bumbler, who's able to mimic sounds and kind of looks like a mongoosey type creature. That was my first thought was when I heard about Jeff. So the daughter, Vori, would ask Jeff to repeat nursery rhymes, which he did. He would repeat them back to her in a clear, high-pitched voice. And the Irvings seemed to tolerate Jeff, and he generally had a friendly attitude toward the family. But Jeff had an uneven temper and would throw objects, particularly at people who passed by the farmhouse where the Irvings lived.
Yeah, if you weren't an Irving, you got fucked with real hard.
Yeah. He also bothered the neighbors the Irvings did have and would spy on them and would report back to the Irvings what was happening with the neighbors. So he's just a busybody.
Shit disturber.
Yeah. So Jeff would make himself at home in the Irving house. He would come in at night and steal food and shit when they were sleeping. And eventually they would start leaving food out for him.
That's very nice.
Was nice. He also killed rabbits with his bare hands that he would give to them. And then in exchange, they would give him bacon and biscuits.
Yeah. It sounds like a good deal.
Yeah.
He's pulling his weight. He's strangling the shit out of the rabbits with his bare fucking hands.
Because he had human hands, right?
Yeah. Like toddler-like hands. So I just imagine him in a field just like choking the shit out of a rabbit.
I'm thinking like a mini-me hands, like little sausage fingers.
Yeah. And it's like the scene in No Country for Old Men. Yeah. He's just strangling a guy. He's strangling a rabbit for like 5 minutes.
Oh my God. It takes a long time to strangle something.
It does.
It does. And stab something like we learned last week.
Yes. They leaked. They leaked to death, apparently. God damn. I'm so glad that we're doing Jeff.
We're done. We're on to a mongoose. How do you like that, Kemper? Anyway, so it wasn't long before they found Jeff to be a bit of a nuisance. So this is extreme, I think. They took a piece of bread and covered it in rat poison. They then put it in the crack of the wall where he would always throw stuff. I guess that was like his little area of the, what was it?
He called it his sanctum.
His sanctum. Well, they put rat poison there. It didn't work. It just made everything worse. So he screamed for 20 straight minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said, it was like screamed like a
pig having a horseshoe nail shoved through his snout.
Very descriptive, unique. So yeah, he kept screaming and moaning. He played it up a lot. When they asked him why he was making this noise, he said, "I did it for the devilment."
Ooh, very good.
Was that good?
Yeah.
He did it for the devilment.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It's one of my favorite quotes.
It is pretty good. I feel like a lot of people do stuff for the devilment of it.
Oh, yeah.
So rumors across the island swirled that the daughter was actually fooling everyone by creating Jeff as a hoax. And her classmates said that she entertained them with spot-on imitations of animal noises.
Which is how Jeff kind of originated.
Yes. And a friend of hers said in 2001 that it was known that she had the ability to throw her voice. But you said that's not a thing.
That's false. Yep. Science proved that was a lie.
I really thought that was a real thing that they could do. You could do.
Nope. Wow. They throwing your voice, making your voice sound like it's coming from somewhere else is impossible.
Wow. I never thought about it. I mean, I guess it makes sense, but you see people do it, but you said it's misdirection.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So there is a whole list of things, obviously, that this talking mongoose could be.
Let's break it down.
Jeff could be categorized as a poltergeist, an elemental spirit like a fairy.
Mm-hmm.
They're also fond of mischievous tricks like throwing rocks, starting fires, and stealing household objects, with which Jeff did. The djinn also have similarities to poltergeists. So djinns are beings with free will that once lived on Earth but were sent away by God. The word djinn comes from an Arabic root meaning hidden from sight. So basically a djinn will take possession of a building, a location, or a person.
Mm-hmm.
They will throw stuff at people. They can levitate. They can cause objects to disappear. They can quickly travel great distances. And one of the powers of the djinn is that they are able to take on any physical form. So they can appear as humans, animals, anything. They can mimic voices of deceased humans. They can claim to be spirits or even Satan themselves. They do enjoy playing tricks and frightening people. The Supernatural episode comes to mind. It says they can feel strong emotions such as fear or grief and gain energy from these strong emotions, which is what they were doing with Dean in that episode. They were feeding off of his emotions, basically. Jeff could possibly be a djinn or a poltergeist. So he had a rich vocabulary of swear words. He loved to sing songs that were unknown to his hosts.
Charlie, Charlie, Chuck, 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 Charlie, my old sport. Clear to the devil if you don't believe. Vanished.
He's, again, opportunity for a rhyme. You didn't take it. That's fine. He sounds like a slam poet.
Yeah, like Def Jam.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how he talks.
It is, yeah. Let's just do it. As news spread of the man weasel, reporters and paranormal investigators visited the farmhouse in hopes of catching a glimpse of Jeff. Or even a chance to hear him speak.
Hell yeah.
That's one hell of an attraction.
Right? Again, there was just nothing going on.
One thing to note in all this is that never once did they profit off of any of this.
I know. Yeah, that is very, very interesting.
Like, what if you're going to make it up, why not cash grab?
Right. Yeah.
It's not selling out, it's buying in.
I just have a hard time wrapping my head around a talking mongoose.
That's why you got to see it.
Oh, I don't want to see any of this.
It's the only way to know.
I don't want to know.
I know, right? If I saw a talking mongoose, my reality would literally flip upside down.
And it's just a matter of how deep do you want to dive to prove somebody wrong?
Yeah.
That's all it is. So in 1932, psychic researcher Harry Price sent his friend Captain James McDonald to Dorlash Cashin to see if the stories were true or not. McDonald visited the Irvings three times between 1932 and 1935, and he never saw Jeff, but he did hear him speak a number of times and saw a bottle and a china tray being thrown without any visible source. You never know. And I just go back and forth depending on the day. Like one day I'm like, yeah, this is a simulation in a parallel universe. And we're all, you know, I'm a crazy one way. And then the next I'm like, no, none of this is real. It's all, I don't know. It depends on the day. I'm either complete skeptic or I'm a complete believer. There's no middle ground for me.
Yeah, same here.
In July 1935, Harry Price and Richard Stanton Lambert journeyed to Dorlash Cashin. I can't ever say it. But Jeff had told the Irvings beforehand that he thought Price was a doubter and would refuse to allow himself to be seen or heard. Jeff kept his word and did not talk to the investigators.
Ain't got no time for doubters, man.
No, he doesn't have time for you. Price and Lambert would later go on to write a book about Jeff called Jeff, The Haunting of Cashin's Gap in 1936. I said I wanted to read this book. Lee said, what?
Oh, it's out of print.
Yeah, and how much?
Oh, it's thousands of dollars on eBay.
Insanity. Price admitted to being perplexed by Jeff. Price made some good points as to why the case could be a hoax, but also admitted that there were considerable evidence on why it could actually be a paranormal event, having never seen the talking mongoose. He said that.
Yeah, dude.
One of the last paranormal investigators to look into Jeff was Nandor Fodor. I can't. It's like a hobbit.
Think of Lord of the Rings. It's like Game of Thrones. It's like Hodor and Frodo had a baby.
Nandor Fodor. Sorry, man. He was a leading authority on poltergeist, haunting, and paranormal phenomena. He actually worked with Sigmund Freud, which is quite interesting. In 1937, Fodor went to the Isle of Man and spent a week staying at the Irvings' house. That's a long time for a house guest.
Yeah. Now, a lot of paranormal investigators have visited Dorlash Cashin, and as soon as they go in, they're like, I have no accommodations here. Like, this place, there's only, you know, there's not much.
There's not much there. It's not a fancy place.
No. And there's not a lot of room. So I don't know how he had to have like slept on the floor or something. He stayed a week. A lot of like everybody else, they stayed like one day and then or 2 days at the most. And then they had a hotel. They did not stay there. This guy stayed there a week.
That's such a long time. That gives me anxiety just thinking of someone staying for a week.
I know. That's like a man. Yeah, you're right. That just waved over me. Thanks.
So yeah, he spent a week, and by the time he got involved with the mystery, Jeff had been around for 5 years, so Jeff was known. Jim had actually written to Fodor stating that it was unlikely that he would get a chance to converse with Jeff, who had become surly over the years. Fodor made the trip anyway, and as was habit with strangers, Jeff refused to talk or make his presence known. Jeff.
That's his deal, dude. He doesn't like to be seen. A lot of Jins are like this.
And I agree. So they never profited off of it. And you would think that when someone would come to check into it, that was kind of on their side and wanted to believe that Jeff really did exist, that they would show some evidence.
Yeah.
You don't hold back if you're doing a hoax.
But he he wasn't looking for fame or fortune.
Nobody was, I guess.
No. He was just trying to live his life.
It just goes back to, for me, it being real. Because if people were to come, you would want to convince them. You would want to show them some evidence. But all these people came and there was no evidence to be shown. And if the family had been doing it, if it was just the family, they would have said, they would have tried to, you know,
pretend. They would have found a way to.
Yeah. So I don't know. Convince them. That gets me too. It's a little weird.
He did say that there were some like raps and taps, like poltergeist sounds, but nothing like
it's
that.
It's a fucking old house and it's in the 30s and they're just like a craggy island and the wind is a whipping. After his last visit, Fodor wrote Jeff a letter, which again, I just feel ridiculous reading this, expressing his disappointment that Jeff refused to greet his guests. Dear Jeff, I am very disappointed that you did not speak to me during the whole week in which I spent here. I came from a long way and took a lot of trouble in collecting all of your clever sayings. I believe you to be very good and generous mongoose. I brought you chocolates and biscuits, and I would have been happy if you had done something for me.
Sounds like a bad Yelp review.
It does. He said initially, I cannot prove he is an animal. I have not seen him. He did not talk to me. He claimed to be an animal. I cannot disprove that claim.
Yeah, you know, I can't disprove it.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. But later said, he said that Jeff was a poltergeist centered on Vori, which is another very valid option. So not much is known about what happened to Jeff in the years after Fodor's visit. Jim Irving passed away in 1945, and Vori had moved to England in 1939, to not only work as a wartime machinist, but to finally be free from the whole Jeff affair. She did not. Another thing about this is they say, oh, it's the daughter who did it. She did not get any kind of sort of popularity from this situation. She was tortured by it.
Yeah, on the contrary. Yeah, she was. It ruined her life, she said.
It did. And you said even on her deathbed, she still said that it was true. She still would not say it was a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1970... Vori did agree to do an interview with journalist Walter McGraw, which was printed in Fate magazine. She was 52, and up until that time, she had refused all interview requests. So the reporter spent an entire day with her, and she said she was a knowledgeable conversationalist, but she did not answer the question he wanted the most, which was what happened to Jeff. She said basically she doesn't know. The last she remembered him being around the farm was 1938 or 1939. He seemed to go away for longer and longer periods of time and then just never showed up again. He made no statement about leaving. There were no goodbyes. He was just gone. In February of 1947, 2 years after Jim's death, the Isle of Man Examiner reported Leslie Graham, a retired Army lieutenant who had bought the Dorlish Cachin. You say it so much better than I do.
Dorlish Cachin.
Was putting away his motorcycle one night when he was startled by an animal with gleaming eyes. It had a weasel-like appearance, but was bigger than a weasel, more like a skunk. Gotham set a snare and in the morning found it trapped and ferocious. It snarled and spat and clawed more venomously than anything I have ever seen. He then clubbed it to death with a stick. The corpse was about 3 feet long with black and yellow matted fur. This was at least proof that some kind of unusual animal did live near the house at one time. But he showed the daughter a photo that he killed, and she said it looked nothing like Jeff. Vori told McGraw that she hated Jeff, and that the early days that she and Jeff were inseparable, but as she grew older, he became closer to her father. And again, she just wanted a social life and friends and just wanted to be accepted, and he was a huge burden. This reputation was... not good. They'd call her, other kids would call her spook.
Yeah, she left that whole life behind her.
Yeah. Was he an evil spirit? Possibly. So he was full of wit and sometimes threatening remarks. He is kind of an asshole sometimes.
Yep. He can be nice. He can give you treats and he can find your sheep, but he'll also throw shit at you.
Yeah. So unlike traditional talking poltergeists, which usually takes time before they start vocalizing, Jeff started talking right away. He then followed up with other poltergeist types of tricks, like throwing things, moving, hiding things, stuff like that. Jeff's case is so unique in paranormal history that despite all the absurdity of it all, researchers are still writing and debating the story almost 90 years later. So, yes, this does sound ridiculous, but there's so much truth to this that after all these years, people are still talking about it and wondering if it's true.
It's such a random event.
Yeah.
That happened so long ago. For it to not be real would kind of be a stretch.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand exactly what you mean.
Like, there is some truth to this story, but it's not real.
No, it's not.
I wish it were. I love Jeff the Talking Mongoose. I wish I could believe in him.
I don't. He scares me. Charles Morrison, a lifelong friend of Jim Irving, heard Jeff speak on two occasions and was convinced it was no hoax. He described hearing a loud, clear voice from behind the boards in the kitchen. It can't be proven, but Avory was probably essential for Jeff's existence. Somehow she provided the energy for Jeff to either exist, or if Jeff was something along the lines of an elemental or even an ancient artificial intelligence, it was awakened and sustained chiefly by Avory. Teenagers have a lot of energy, and a lot of times poltergeists will surround themselves with that teenage angsty energy.
Any kind of negative, sort of rebellious type energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
A young girl going through puberty, that'll do it.
Yeah. With no one around and no friends and no, the angst. Once Vori grew older and kind of tired of Jeff antics, he grew more sullen and he disappeared for longer periods of time. She moved away to England and he vanished once and for all. But her sister said that on the day that Jem, her dad, passed, there were strange noises heard in the house and the small broom on the mantle moved around by itself. The essence of Jeff may still have been around the farmhouse, but without a proper source of power, Vori, it could no longer produce an independent personality. So some might even say that Jeff was an artificial intelligence that had been created by a highly advanced and now vanished civilization that could have been terrestrial or extraterrestrial.
He could be an alien.
Not an artificial intelligence contained within a machine, but artificial intelligence without a physical form. In other words, an artificial spirit.
Like a from like a previous civilization.
Mm-hmm.
A more advanced civilization had like an organic AI or a spiritual AI.
Oh, wow.
Or something like that.
Like Black Mirror shit. So yeah, these AIs were locked away millions of years ago for some reason, perhaps. And as time wore on, some managed to escape their confinement and proceeded to wreak havoc in the area where they were kept. This is interesting. I like this theory.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they have limited energy and can no longer be recharged. And that could explain why they disappear so abruptly and completely, never to be heard from again. Freestyle thoughts.
Whoa, that will.
What?
Jeez, drop that bomb on me.
I have a lot. I have several. It's not real is the number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, what is it? Manifest? Maybe he was manifested into existence just by their sheer belief that he existed. That's deep.
For real.
That's a thing. That's a thing. That's a theory, right?
Yeah. If you read the book, The Astral Plane, it talks about how there's like dimensions of this earth layered onto each other.
Yes.
And every once in a while, it reacts to everything that we say and do.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, something can come back through that and pop into our dimension.
One of the things that I saw that was interesting was a visual, and it was that I hate doing visuals like this, but I'm basically going to put my hands together and weave them back and forth like this. And when they bump like that, that's where the two parallel universes converge. And every once in a while, they'll hit each other.
Ah.
Like just as a physical demonstration of what it's actually. Yeah. 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 It's like that.
Interweave them.
So that's interesting.
Eyebrow tufts.
Yeah, tell me about the eyebrow tufts. So he pulled them out himself and put them in a jar himself.
Yes. He took out tufts Jeff to be tested.
Jeff yep. took him out his
he
own
took him out of his own ass. No, it's supposed to be out off of his eyebrow.
His bushy
and
brows.
Put him in a jar on top of the fireplace and to be tested. And DNA wasn't back then, so
right.
they were just microscoped. And results came back. Mona.
The dog. So I'm just trying to think of, like, it kind of reminds me of The Thing, which is just really weird and way out of left field. But when you take a little bit of that DNA with you, like, I don't know how would you you use the dog to manifest a mongoose?
Exactly, yeah. And there's some witches and warlocks that would create totems, you know?
Yeah.
To do their bidding, you know, help them like a little sidekick, you know, like mm-hmm. Igor type thing.
Yeah.
There were cases where, like, whenever they would get old and, like, die of natural causes, they would put their consciousness into their totem.
Yeah. And live on.
Yeah. But eventually their memories and stuff would deteriorate and they would just become whatever.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe he had uploaded himself into a mongoose.
Possibly.
And since forgotten.
What it was like. Yeah. Because he's smart. He's been around the block.
Kills those rabbits.
Strangles the shit out of them.
So I don't know. I don't know about this one. This is weird.
I believe that if you're not careful, your mind can make something appear real. And oh, yeah. to you, if it appears real, what's to say it's not real?
What's the difference? Yeah, what's the difference? You know? Yeah.
The mind is incredibly powerful and mysterious. And we've just scratched the surface of understanding.
Right. And that's the single mind. I mean, like the hive mind of the family, if they all thought it was something, right. they, you know, and then they got outside influences of people like, hey, let's go. Can we come talk to him? And it just became more and more real. Or they were just a bunch of dirty little liars.
Well, I mean, even if they were dirty little liars, it's a cool story that came out of it.
It is definitely a cool story. And for it to be 90 years later and people still talking about this,
that's what
mongoose,
I'm saying.
There's something to it here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk to any mongooses.
No, I don't either.
I'm good. I don't want to hear my dogs talk, really. I don't want to know what they have to say.
No, it's creepy enough that there's no sign language.
Yeah. Yeah. And sad in a weird way.
Like, what are you doing? You might as well hand him an AK-47.
Yeah. Welcome to humanity.
Welcome to existence.
Oh, gosh. So, yeah, we just needed a little break just to kind of have a little fun, just kind of loosey-goosey.
And what a break it was. This was so easy, breezy.
Something definitely interesting. Yeah, we work really hard on these, you guys. Hopefully it comes across as effortless. It probably doesn't, but we do work really hard on these, and we just needed a little break. We appreciate everything, and if you want to hear more kind of freestyle, loosey-goosey, fun episodes like this, just let us know. And if not, just let us know. This was needed for our mental health.
Yeah. So we're both dealing with it.
Yeah.
And we're dealing with it together.
Yeah. We are usually pretty good about evening each other out and meeting in the middle and doing mm-hmm. what needs to be done. So he's the best creative partner I could ask for.
Aww.
I mean that. We work very well together.
I agree.
And if you're still listening to our weird mongoose episode, we love the shit out of you.
Absolutely. Oh my God. Anybody who's still listening right now, I want to cry and hug you.
Please follow us on all social media platforms. Any questions or comments, email us at deadlycereal@gmail.com. If you would like to support this podcast, the link is in the description.